Thank you, Simon. I'm Layla, I'm an addict. It's really nice to be here, and also it just feels a bit weird doing this because it's no sharing from the floor, so just think, I wonder what people think. It is really nice to be here, and yeah, I don't really like talking for this long. Every time I get asked to talk for like 50 or, 40 minutes, I just sort of manage about half an hour, and then I just go dead, but it's really, just have to sort of talk more about other stuff. But yeah, it is, I'll sort of start off from where I came from. I was born in London, both my parents emigrated here, and I come from a quite a big family, which is, there were seven children. There were, because my brother died about 12 years ago, he drowned. So, there's six of us left now. But, it was, my parents really couldn't cope, really. They couldn't really look after us properly. They found it really, really difficult. My mum gave up very quickly, and I think it was the effect of, my dad's drinking, and gambling, and I think she just found it really difficult. And it also, there wasn't really much age difference between us either. There was like about an hour. There was like about there was like a year, just over a year, So it was, because my sisters, my sister's born in 63, I'm born in 62, and it just goes down to the youngest one. I think it was just impossible for my mum really to cope, and also because she was left on her own a lot, because my dad worked full time, and after work he would go to the pub, and then at the weekends he would go to the betting office, and there wasn't really much, there wasn't really anything at home, there wasn't, there was times when there weren't even electricity, there wasn't gas, and there wasn't food, and it was difficult for both of them, and my dad suffered from alcoholism, and he found it really difficult, to cope as well. And it must have been overwhelming for him as well, and difficult. And also because they come from a different generation as well, and the only way that he could deal with it, I'd imagine, was just drinking, really, and just getting drunk. And eventually, we were taken into care, and we was, social services stepped in, and they sort of used to take us away at the weekends and holidays, and all on the south coast. And it was nice, really. It was nice that we were all kept together, we were all looked after. We went places where we were fed regularly, we were put into bed, clean, and, there was food, we never went hungry. And that was nice, and I really appreciated that, and it meant a lot to me to go somewhere where you're being looked after and being taken care of. Because as a child, I just took on that role of worrying and caring for my brothers and sisters, and I started stealing from a really young age, even when I was with my mum and dad, and going down Rigney Market and stealing and, nicking people's purses. I was only about seven or eight, and I used to go into people's handbags and nick their purses, I just knew that there was money in there. Not that, there was money, and I knew that this money could buy food and it could take care of us. And I remember nicking food, and it was just nice to go somewhere where it wasn't my responsibility. I didn't feel that it was my responsibility, it was adult's responsibility, and that's how I sort of felt. I've always felt like an adult, I never really felt like I was a child. And then we managed to find foster parents that took us on permanently, because they also didn't split us up either, which was really nice. And it was in a children's home on the south, on the coast, in a little village called Lansing, which was really nice. It was on the seafront, and we had a really nice foster mother that looked after us, that took care of us, and she had lots of other families there. And I used to steal from her. I used to go into her bedroom in the morning, and I was 11 then, and I used to go into her bedroom, and I used to go into her purse and nick money out of her purse. And I used to have this money, and I used to go to school, and on the way at lunchtime, we used to go out of school and go to a newsagent's and buy sweets, and we used to be able to buy single cigarettes, I remember. And we used to buy these single cigarettes, and I used to smoke them, and used to go behind the bicycle sheds. And you remember, I remember my first cigarette because I remember wanting to throw up. I remember like being sick, but I still carried on smoking because by then my foster mother had met her husband. Well, she met a man that became her husband, and he used to smoke like these cigarettes called Moor, these long brown things. And he used to leave them in ashtrays all over the house where he used to light it. And I used to not sneak around, but he'd like forget that he'd left his cigarette. So I'd go up to it and I'd take a big drag and I'd put it back in the ashtray, then run somewhere else. And I remember in this children's home, we used to have like this big medicine cupboard. And I remember my foster mother used to open it. And there was all these bottles in there, and I was always to be fascinated what was in these bottles. And I remember just looking at them, and I knew they were sort of, I don't really know what I thought about them, but I knew it was medicine, and I knew that it made you better, or it done something to you. And I was always intrigued by it. Every time she opened it, my little eyes would be like, oh, what's that, you know? And I used to be fascinated by all the different colour tablets, because it was quite a big medicine cupboard. And they used to have a pantry as well. And in this pantry, it used to be packed with food. And I used to nick all this food. And I'd go up to my bedroom and I'd stuff myself with all this food. And I'd go to sleep. And that's why, you know, so I was stealing, I was eating food, you know. And I was quite ashamed because I was quite sort of plump as well, you know, quite sort of overweight at school. And I remember, and then I started to notice alcohol, because the man that my foster mother married, he was an alcoholic. And the first thing he'd done was built this bar in the house. No, because he was a carpenter as well, so it was all like, he sort of built all these wardrobes and bar, you know, all this, and there's this bar that just appeared, and I thought, oh, that looks good, you know. So I used to go behind there, take a drink, and just, I don't even know what I was drinking, but I remember drinking and going on, you know, on the way to school. And we was allowed to walk to school when we got a bit older. And so on the way to school, I'd sort of nick drink on the way from the off licences and just drink. And we used to get taken away in the summer. We'd get in the summer holidays, we'd go to Spain or Holland, or because we had au pairs that came from overseas, like Sweden or Finland. And my foster mother used to find camping areas in those countries. And so she'd take like minibus, you know, like one minibus for the girls and one minibus for the boys, and we'd be dragged all over Europe. But it was nice. But I used to just run away sometimes the day before we was meant to go, and I'd have all the part, they'd do all the passports, they'd sort everything out, and we was all ready to go and all my stuff was all packed, and I'd just like disappear. And I just kept running away all the time. I'd always run away from a really young age, like from 13, 14, you know. And I'd just hitchhike up to London. I just used to put my thumb out and just hitchhike. And I used to want to find my mum and dad because they never used to come down that often. And when my dad did come down, he'd get off the train and he always looked like he was sort of hang gliding down the road. And, you know, because where he was so pissed all the time. And I used to feel embarrassed. And I used to see him getting off the train and I used to think, oh no, you know. And it was like a little village, and I used to feel so embarrassed when he used to get off the train. But I still used to, and sometimes I used to hide, you know, where I felt quite embarrassed of him. And he'd sort of end up at the children's home, and, you know, and they used to take us out. They used to be allowed to take us out for the day, and he used to take us to the pub or the betting office, you know. And the foster parents would drive past the pub, and we'd all be in this pub, and then it'd be like, and my dad would start screaming and arguing, and I'd think, oh, God, you know, it was really embarrassing. But it was, you know. And eventually my foster mother, she just couldn't cope anymore with me, you know. She just found it difficult, you know, because also she was coming to London sort of every other week, you know, and take me out of police stations and lock-up units and foster parents. And no matter what time it was or what day it was, she just dropped everything, and she'd jump in the car, drive up to London, come to a police station, take me back to the children's home. Then a few days later, I'll be back off again. And then she, you know, and also she was going through a lot of problems with her own marriage. And he was having an affair with another woman, and, you know, she was, you know, she had that worry. And then she had me running, you know, disappearing every few days, and, you know, and she just asked me to be removed from the children's home. And I was removed and put into another home in London. And I just jumped on this bus one day. I remember just jumping on this bus and going past Piccadilly. I remember just seeing that Coca-Cola advert. It was a Coca-Cola advert, and there was a clock, and there was that statue in the middle there. And I remember this bus came round and I just jumped off, and I remember just going towards an area where there was all kids, you know, to me they were kids, because we'd all sort of, when I started talking to them, they'd all sort of come from similar backgrounds to me, and, you know, and they'd run away from home, or they'd disappeared from children's homes, or come from broken families, or, you know, some hadn't, some had just left home, some had just, you know, and a lot of them were gay guys. I remember them, a lot of them were girls from, like, Bristol, Liverpool, I don't know, Bradford, Leeds. It was all from up north, you know, and they used to just get off at trains in King's Cross and just come down to London, you know, and just make some money over the weekend and just go back, you know. Or from you know, I met people from Scotland as well. Lots of this Scottish girl, I met this girl called Maria. The reason I talk about her, because she took me up to, she was a Scottish girl, and she was living in King's Cross, and she was living with this bloke, and she took me in, really. She was older than me. And I remember her sort of taking me in and looking after me, and she used to feed me, she used to look after me, and she took me up to Leeds. I remember her taking me up to Leeds to meet her mum and dad. And both her parents were alcoholics as well, but the reason, because I was like 14, and a month ago I walked into the Brixton meeting and she was sat in the meeting. I just couldn't believe it, she was just sat there. And I looked at her, she looked at me, and I said her name and she said my name, and we were just like, you know, just like really. And you know, she was prostituting, she was a year older than me, you know, so she was like 16, I was 15, and she was doing punters, she was going with punters, and she was feeding me. And I'll never ever forget that, you know, someone that looked after me, and she, you know, she wouldn't let anyone sort of hurt me or harm me, and she just sort of took me under her wings. And I remember, and something happened that we just disappeared. I remember she just went one way and I went the other way. And we both ended up on drugs, but we both ended up using in different areas, and we never ever met each other. And she sort of lived quite a sort of similar using to me. And it was just that sort of lifestyle, really. You know, from that age till I was 24, I just sort of lived in areas and done things that, you know, I'd done things that were really, really degrading, doing stuff that was really embarrassing, you know, and ashamed, you know. From every sort of crime you can imagine, you know, like, you know, apart from some, you know, like, but, you know, petty crime, you know, really, really petty, you know, crime, and going into prison, you know, just going in and out of prison. I was just, what was happening was, from the age of 11 until I was 24, all that really happened to me was I was just going in and out of institutions, like, you know, the couple of times I sort of attempted to come off drugs, the couple of times, you know, that I overdosed and woke up in psychiatric hospitals, you know, ending up in detoxes, going into hostels, going into prisons, you know, and that's all that happened. You know, I'd go into these places and I'd put on a bit of weight, I sort of looked physically better, and then I'd come back out again. I'd go in front of the same judge as well, you know, I'd go in front of one judge and he'd go, right, a £50 fine or a £20 fine or something. And then I would go back in front of him like the day later and he'd go, I'm sure you was here yesterday, you know, and I, you know, and that's what all was, you know, in all those London courts like Bow Street and Marlborough Street and all those West End Centrals and those police stations and King's Cross, you know, and, you know, and it was like, you know, you'd get arrested and you'd go into a police cell and you'd have, you know, you'd go with the policeman, you know, you'd do something sexual with the policeman so you could go and see, you know, they'd let you see a doctor or, you know, get you some sort of medication. And, you know, that's all that was going on. It was just one thing from another. And it was really sort of, when I sort of look back at all that, and all, it doesn't really seem like it really happened to me. It feels like I was watching someone else's life. Because, you know, and when I was 17, I remember getting pregnant and I was in Holloway serving a prison sentence, you know, and having, you know, giving birth to this little boy, you know, and going back to Holloway and then going back to my foster parents, you know, and I've got a 24-year-old son, you know, and it was when he was a couple of years old, you know, I remember I was using so much that I couldn't cope looking after him. And it was, and I was going into places that were really unhealthy, really dangerous, you know, and I was neglecting him, and, you know, and I put him into voluntary care. And, you know, and after a couple of years, you know, I couldn't even turn up for court cases or visits, or, you know, I'd remove him from the foster parents. They'd allow me access. And I'd come back a couple of days later and they'd go to me, "You were meant to be back a couple of days ago." And I'd go, and I'd sort of have this terrible attitude, like, "He's my son, I can do what I want," you know, start screaming at him. And they'd look at me like, you know, and I'd turn up stoned, you know, I wouldn't turn up, and then the police were looking for me, and then they'd eventually find me in some hotel in Queensway or King's Cross, and then they'd take Ashley back, you know, and then, you know, and I remember, you know, in 1986, I was, you know, I came out of prison, and this, well, before I came out of prison, this probation officer visited me in Holloway, and she said to me, there's a fellowship called Narcotics Anonymous. And I thought, what? You know, like, I thought, she's gone off her head, this woman. You know, like, what if they sent me up, you know, some sort of lunatic, you know? And I said to her, "Have you got any fags?" You know, and she said... and she went, yeah, I bought it, you know. And she started giving me all these pamphlets to read. And I could hardly read as well, and I couldn't even read properly. And she said to me, "There's a fellowship, and it, you know, it's called Narcotics Anonymous. It's a bunch of recovering addicts." I thought, I've never met anyone, you know, that's ever come off of drugs or anything like that, you know. And when I came out of court, and she sort of walked me round to a probation service in Rathbone Place, you know, and someone from NA was actually doing voluntary work, and he came up to me, he started talking to me and everything. And he said to me, "And I'll walk you back to your hostel, and I'll come and pick you up tonight, and I'll take you to a meeting." And that's how I got to my first meeting. This guy was doing voluntary work, and he's still clean now, since he's clean about 22 years. And he still does a lot of service in NA. He's still very much in the middle of the fellowship. You know, and I remember him taking me to my first meeting, and because it was in Rathbone Place in the west, in just off Oxford Street, and there was Tottenham Court Road, and there was Greek Street, the hostel, I thought, oh, this is really handy, this is. I could get a couple of amps, have a hit, and I could go to the meeting. And that's what I used to do. I used to go and get a couple of amps, have a hit, and then just go to the meeting. They'd wake me up and they'd go, "Excuse me, the meeting's finished." You know, and I'd be like that. You know, I'd be in the toilet trying to get a hit, you know. And that's what went on about, you know, and that's what I used to do. They'd say to me, "Oh, there's another meeting tomorrow." And they eventually got to know my name, and they'd go to me, "Layla, like, the meeting's finished now. We all go for coffee." And I'd go... And I just used to follow people for coffee in Charlotte Street. There was this coffee house. It was like this Italian place. And it was really nice because that's where they used to take me. You know, then sort of eventually, you know, I did get clean. You know, I went into a detox centre up in Hampstead Road. And this doctor used to come to Rathbone and give out a script. And, you know, and then I struggled for a few years. You know, I'd get periods of clean time. And then I'd start using again, and then I'd get clean, and then I'd start using, and I'd go to meetings, you know. I always went to meetings, so I'd start commitment, you know, someone that go the meeting, would go, "Got a tea commitment," I'd put my hand up, you know, I'd put my hand up, take the tea, and I wouldn't turn up, you know, the week after, I'll take on, "Oh, we need a literature person," I'll put my hand up, and then I'd sort of disappear with this literature, or I'll leave it round some dealer's ass or something like that, and start reading it to the dealer. "Oh, look at this, have you ever seen this? Like a blue book and all that, be out of it," you know. And then I'd sort of end up as a GSR, go to an ASC and think, "Oh, what's, you know," or didn't understand. I didn't really understand what the fellowship was about, really. I used to think it was just sort of some sort of drop-in. I didn't really understand that you could sort of recover and sort of have a life and build your life, you know. And, you know, and it you know, and I used to look around me and I used to think, how are these people getting on with their lives? You know, they seem so free and peaceful and happy and, you know, I'm not going to recover. And then I used to think, like, oh, they haven't been through what I've been through. You know, like, you just be full of this sort of self-pity and this sort of hatred and, you know, this bitterness and anger and just be so resentful, you know. And I'd hear people sharing about all these things that sort of were going on in their lives, and I'd be sitting there fuming, you know, thinking, well, that's not happening to me, you know. I don't get that. That doesn't happen to me, you know, like... And I remember, you know, I was a few years clean the second time around, And I was thinking, and I sat down with my sponsor, and my sponsor said to me, look, where do you want to be in your life? You know, I want you to vision something, you know, have a vision, you know, just tell me what you want to do, or just go away and think about what you want to do. Because all I was doing was going to meetings and just being resentful and angry. That's all I was doing. I was complaining, you know, going, I ain't got this, that's all right for them, you know, they got this, and she's got a boyfriend, he's got a job, and he's got a car, and she's got nice clothes, and blah, 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 and they go away on holidays, and they got a degree, and he's got a driving licence, and blah, you know, it was just like going on and on and on, you know, she's got carpet in her front room, and he's got a TV, you know, and she's got a nice haircut, you know, and it was just like that thing of like, and she can read, and I can't, you know, and just so sort of resentful and angry and just so full of self-pity, you know, and I just thought, you know, these people have got a driving licence because they've gone and take driving lessons. These people have got a degree because they've gone to college and, you know, they, these people have, you know, this person has got this stuff because they've gone out and got a job, or, you know, they've earned money, you know, like, because my attitude was, oh, you know, I want a driving licence, but you can go and pay someone. You can go and pay someone 50 quid. They're going to get you a driving licence, you know, if you want, you know, if you want furniture in your flat, you go and kite it, you know, you go and, you know, dip someone in Covent Garden, get their card and go round and just buy it all, you know. And that was the sort of attitude I had, and that's what I did for a couple of years in recovery. I'm, you know, just going up and down, you know, Oxford Street, just shoplifting and stealing things, and, you know, eventually, you know, and it just had to stop, you know, because I thought, if I carry on behaving like this, I'm just going to end up back in prison, you know, and I can't go in front of a judge and go, oh, I'm in NA, you know, I've got a couple of years clean. And they go, what? You're what? Do you know what I mean? I've got 49 convictions and stand in front of a judge, you know, that, oh, I'm in NA now, Your Honour, you know, and have, like, my sponsor standing there saying something about me, they're going to fucking put you in a Brampton or something. No, but it is, you know, because I, you know, I do, you know, and I did, you know, I have turned my life around. You know, a few years ago, I changed the direction that I was in, one industry that I didn't want to be in anymore, and I just wanted to change my life, you know, and I did. I went and did a GMVQ in art and design, and I got a distinction. I remember getting the highest mark in that college, and I was just like, wow, you know, and I remember the first day, I was walking up the stairs and the course was at the top floor and I thought, I can't go there, I can't do it, I can't do it, I can't do it. And I remember bursting out crying, you know, just crying and crying because I was so petrified and terrified of just walking up these stairs. And I walked in and I was just like, oh God, I'm scared, I'm scared. And that lesson was only 2 hours a week and I remember just being terrified of 2 hours sitting there. You know, then after that I did an access and I covered all the units. You know, 14 units, you know, all at level 13 and two at level, you know, at level two. And you know, then I was thinking, oh, I want to go to university, I want to go to university. I couldn't believe it, you know, and then I was going to apply to all these universities in London and I'm in one, you know, that's got, you know, it's like the University of the Arts, you know, it's part of an institute that's loads of universities in London. And I was thinking, oh, I'm not going to get in there, I'm not going to get in there, you know, and I did get in, you know. And it's just, you know, I remember just going there in my first, you know, I'm in my final year now, you know, I'm writing a dissertation, you know, like a 7,000 word essay. You know, I couldn't even write a fucking sentence when I came into recovery, you know. And now I'm writing 7,000 words, you know. And what also happened, you know, now, you know, today we had a meeting at uni and we're talking about, you know, people going on to do MAs, you know, and I've started to go, you know, I've been to open days. I've been to three, you know, colleges that offer MA courses, and I've been to all three of them. You know, I've got a couple more to go. But, you know, just to come from where, you know, I remember when I was at school, the teacher used to pick me up by my hair because I was so disruptive and boot me out the, you know, go, fucking get out, you know, like you're just, you know. No, so they used to be able to hit you in them days, and they did hit you, you know, but they used to whack you, like, get out. You know, now the kids whack the teachers. No, but, you know, and then when I remember, like, 13 years ago, you know, my son had been with these foster parents, you know, for, like, almost 7 years, you know, and they went for adoption. They, you know, there was like, they were going for adoption, and I tried to get access to him, and, you know, he got really scared, because the memories he had of me as well was like, you know, he didn't really have much memories of me, and he was quite sort of confused about it all, you know, like being removed from his foster parent, and they sort of brought in someone independently, and, you know, they came and saw me, they came and saw him, they saw his foster parents, you know, and he remained with the adoptive parents, you know, and he said to me, you know, because I've actually just met him recently, like a month ago, and, you know, he's 24, and he said to me, I didn't say that, you know, I didn't say that I wanted to stay with the adoptive parents, you know, and he said, that wasn't an adult decision, I was a child, you know, and I didn't want to be brought up with them. And it's really painful to hear this sort of stuff, really, you know, because I met him about a month ago, and he actually got in contact with social services and he wanted to come and look for me. And I had to meet him in Russell Square, you know, so, like a 6'1" man standing there, because the memory I have of him was pushing him in a buggy, you know, up and down Tottenham Court Road or in a shooting gallery. And, you know, and I'm standing there and this 6'1" man just fell in my arms, and I remember just holding him and he was like shaking. And he was talking to me and he said to me, and I was, he was telling me, he said, you know, I didn't want to, you know, he said, why didn't you bring me up? And I said, I couldn't, you know, I wasn't well, and, you know, I couldn't look after, you know, not you, I couldn't look after myself. I didn't say anything about him. I didn't say that I couldn't look after you. I said, I couldn't cope, you know, I found it difficult doing what I was doing because I was using drugs, I was living in hotels, you know, and it wasn't fair. I wanted the best for you. I wanted you to be looked after properly. And he said, well, I wasn't, you know. I said, look, you had a better life than I did, you know, like, in a way, you know, because he was looked after properly. He said, well, I didn't want to be there. And it's really weird because he sort of, I was with him today, he came up to my uni, because he comes and stays, and he comes for a few hours and he ends up staying about a week, you know, so he just lays, you know, but it's really sweet. But he is really, you know, and he says, I'm so proud of you. He puts his arms around me, holds my hand, and he just sits there and he stares at me. Because I said, what do you keep looking at me for? He said, I'll just keep looking at your eyelashes and your lips, because he looks very similar. And I think it's just that he's never seen, he's not known anything about me. He doesn't know, because he said to me that when he comes up to London to work, because he comes up to London and goes and works, he says, I walk past people and I look at women and I don't know if they're my mum, you know, and I sit on the tube and I look, you know, and I don't know anything about me. And he said, it's so nice just to know where I come from, you know, because I don't know, they've not told me anything, you know, but that's really nice, you know. And the other thing is, you know, it is really, because the partner that I'm with now, we're not able to have children, you know, we need some help, you know, medically, and, you know, and I've also failed a couple of treatments this year, and I started another one yesterday, so, you know, hopefully, fingers crossed, but, you know, I'm not expecting, you know, it's nice if it does happen, but it's really, and it's painful when it doesn't happen, but it's something that I've learned, you know, that just to get on with it, you know, you just need to, you know, just carry on, and share about it, really. And, you know, and I've got, you know, and I do have a sponsor. I've always had the same sponsor ever since 1986, you know, and she's the closest person to me, really, you know. She's the one that I've developed a relationship with, and it's been consistent and it's been honest, you know, and I've been through the steps with her a few times, you know, and I continue. A few months ago she put me back on step one, and I thought, what, was she putting me back on step one? But it was really nice, you know, it's just a mini step one, you know, and it's really nice just to be able to talk and write about certain areas in my life, you know, write stuff financially, like emotionally, because there's not really many people in recovery that I'm close to, like really, really close to, and there's a part of me that gets quite close to women, and then I sort of go, you know, and it's been a pattern of mine, and I've, you know, very much aware of it, but I've not really done much about it. And just the last few months, I've just sort of made an effort, you know, and sometimes I do get close to women and I put in all, a certain amount of effort in, and then I sort of, what I do is I sort of attract really the wrong people sometimes, you know, and it's, and what I end up doing is I end up giving, doing so much in a friendship, and then I get resentful and angry afterwards, and I'm just thinking, you know, and that's not the sort of people that I do want to attract in my life, you know, and that's an area that I need to, and also I'm quite scared financially as well, because you know, I graduate at the end of next year, you know, and I don't know, I'd like to be able to make a living at what I do, but I know it's really hard and it's really competitive, and there's not many students that do come out of university in the subject that I'm doing and go on to be really successful. And I don't mean like hugely financially successful, but just to be able to make a living and just to, you know, because you do have, you know, I've got to be realistic, you know, I can't just sit in my flat all day painting, you know, that ain't going to pay the water bills and the gas bill and electric and put food in the fridge, is it? But I'd like to be able to do that, you know, be able to make that sort of life for myself where it is a way that I enjoy, you know, and so the steps, you know, and I've always, not just the steps are really important, you know, because it is a 12-step program. I do a lot of service. I've always done service. I've always kept coming back, and it is really important to me. I do value what I have, and I do appreciate, you know, and I do see my mum, you know. I did meet my mum when I came into recovery. I got back in contact with her and my brothers and sisters. We're not really that close as a family, and they don't really know anything about me, you know. They don't know a lot about me. They knew that I was in, you know, they used to come and visit me when I was in the when they were in the children's home. They used to come up to prison and visit me in prisons and things like that. But I don't tell them, you know, every detail of my using or anything. You know, I go and see my mum every week, and I make sure that she's all right, and, you know, and I take care of her. But apart from that, you know, I'm much more closer to people in recovery, you know, and the fellowship knows more about me than my own family as well. You know, but it is amazing, recovery. The things that I've done and the places that I've been to. You know, when I was using, I just used to walk around Algar Square or up and down Tottenham Court Road, or, you know, I never went anywhere when I was using, nowhere, you know. I was always scared to go anywhere because I used to be frightened that I'd be sick, you know, and I wouldn't be able to get anything, you know. And since I've been in recovery, I went to a meeting in Israel once in an air raid shelter. I met someone I got a contact, and she took me to a meeting. And, you know, I've been to Thailand, I've been to India, I've been all around Europe, I've been to India a few times, you know, I've been to Thailand. I've actually did a chair in Thailand at the South Asian Convention out there. They asked me to talk, and that was really amazing, you know. And because when I was using, I never thought that you people came off drugs. I never knew that there was a life after drugs. I just thought that you just died. That's what I used to think. And that's what I saw as well. I used to see that happening around me, you know. I used to, or people stop using, you know, certain drugs, and then they'd go on to other drugs, you know, and that's what I thought happened. Or they'd sort of end up just in and out of institutions for the rest of their life, you know, because most of the people, I don't think there's anyone in NA that I used to use with. No one, I don't think. I've seen people come in and not stay very long and then go back out again, but there's no one in this fellowship that I used to use with. And it's, you know, and that makes me feel quite sad, because I know a lot of people from my past that I used to use with, you know, and a lot of them have died, you know. A lot of them are just spending the rest of their lives in prison, you know, and that is really sad, really, really sad. And, you know, and I do really value what I have. It means a lot to me, recovery. It really does, because I don't want to go back to what I spoke about, you know. I don't want to go back to King's Cross or Queen. Because when I was using, not just physically, but emotionally, you know, because I remember, you know, coming in with abscesses on my legs, you know, and having, you know, losing all my teeth, you know, and they'd all rotted, and, you know, and just feeling, and not even having any energy to, I remember coming in at 24 and not even being able to walk properly. I remember I couldn't even walk properly, you know, where, and I hadn't eaten for years and years. I used to just eat Dian bars, you know, or anything like a bowl of cereal, you know, and not even, I didn't even know how to take care of myself, you know, And it's so nice to be able to do all those things, you know, just to have, you know, just be restored to some dignity. Well, a lot of dignity, really, you know, and be looked up, you know, and know that I've been looked after, you know, and I've been taken care of, you know, and know that things are all right, you know, because I've got a life that is beyond what I ever imagined, you know. It is beyond my wildest dreams. I never, ever imagined my life to be... I'm not saying that I have anything material, because I don't have anything materially, you know, nothing at all, but emotionally and spiritually, you know, I have the capacity to care about people. You know, I don't harm anyone, I don't let people down, I'm able to love people, I'm able to be there for people, I'm able to care, you know, I'm able to show compassion, you know, and I'm a good girlfriend. You know, my son the other day, he said to me, you know, when he said goodbye, he said, "Oh, bye, Mum." And it was really nice, because, you know, when he said that, that was really lovely. And I said, oh, I was a bit sort of like, oh, I said, oh, that feels a bit weird, you know, because we're really able to talk to each other, you know, which is really nice. So, you know, so I do have a wonderful life, really. Reminds you of that James Stewart film. Do you remember? It's a Wonderful Life. But it is. It does feel like a really a wonderful life, you know. And it's not because I've got... Because, you know, the other things I'll finish on, it's not because I've actually come back into my life, because I still had a life anyway before that happened. And it's not because I've got children to Chris, because I met Chris and I knew Chris, my partner, couldn't have children, you know. So it's not like I've got anything, you know. It's just that I've got... You know, I can wake up, I can have a bath, I can, you know, put clean clothes on, I can eat something, you know, I'm not wandering around on the streets, I'm not going into places and areas that are dangerous, that are unhealthy, you know, and that's all, you know, this is what this fellowship's given me. It's given me so much that I can't ever, you know, I could just sit here for hours, but I'm not going to. And I just want to say thank you for listening to me, and thank you for asking to share.
Thanks, Slade.
Thanks.